This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the message?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to this next segment of the Mile High Philosophy Summit. Thank you for joining us. We've had so many people join us from around the world, watching, listening, and you know, remember, you're going to be able to watch all the replays. And it's been incredible conversations with all our guests. Most certainly, mark your calendar for Mile High August 20th to 23rd. We are on for that. That is moving forward. And you know, part of why we decided to do this virtual event was to really help people refocus on their philosophy during this time, and help that be a guide for everyone who are, you know, chiropractors around the world. And so we're grateful to have you join us, and grateful to have these conversations. I've got to say, I'm very thrilled about this next presenter, next person we're discussing philosophy with, Dr. Monique Andrews. She spoke at Mile High last year. She's one of my favorite people to converse with one-on-one on philosophy, science, and art. She's a passionate educator. She's a doctor of chiropractic and a master of science, neuroscience. She's had chiropractic practice. She's a Palmer graduate. She taught at Palmer and at LifeWest. And really has just contributed to so many chiropractors and chiropractic students in so many ways. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Monique Andrews.
Thank you so much, Danny. I'm really excited to be here with you today. It's such a treat for me to get to talk about philosophy, because so often I'm called on to talk mostly about science. And for me, the two are inseparable, but I rarely get called upon specifically to talk philosophy, so I'm totally stoked to be here with you today and honored with the lineup that you have.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking your time to be here. And I agree, that's a good place to start in just a moment, which is often people think of you and think of science. However, I've heard you describe yourself as a 33 principal chiropractor and then some. So I think it was a quote. That's exactly how I heard you say it, possibly, if I remember right. So, but first, let's help people get to know you a little bit. What first got the philosophical crank spinning, or who were your philosophical influences that spurred, lit that spark in you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Danny, because when I first went into chiropractic, I went into chiropractic having already done graduate work in neuroscience. And so I found myself in chiropractic school really much more as a mechanist originally. And, I followed a girl to chiropractic college. And when I got there, I thought, I'm just going to be like a glorified physiotherapist. And I think it was my second trimester at Palmer when I went to hear this guy speak, and it was Reggie Gold, and he gave his Chemistry of Life talk. And I've said this so many times, but my life literally turned 180 degrees in that, 50 minutes spent with him, and we became friends after that. And so for me, Reggie was the first, my first foray into philosophy, but it was such a dramatic shift for me. I always say it was that I can pinpoint that moment in time that it happened. And then from there, Sue Brown, became somebody that I follow very closely and studied with, the list is endless, really. Joe Strauss. We used to have triunes. We used to go down to Sherman to their student triunes, and then we started having them at Palmer. And there was a time when I was a student that I was the president of the student IFCO, then the FSCO.
Excellent. I have to ask, around what year was that, the student triune down at Sherman?
So like 99, 2000.
We might have crossed paths.
I'm sure we did.
Because I graduated in 96, and I was hanging around at Sherman till 99 when my wife graduated and going to the triune program. So we probably were both in the audience.
Yeah. That was the first time I'd ever heard Donnie speak too, was at a Sherman triune.
Well, there you go. And I guarantee you I was there. So
yeah.
Interesting. It's what a small world, and especially when our thoughts are, you know, in the same kind of vein. So philosophy, science, and art, chiropractic is all three. What's the purpose of philosophy in your mind in terms of chiropractic and in terms of life?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the pat answer to that is our philosophy informs our science. But really, I think, you know, nobody's going to argue that our philosophy in chiropractic is what actually sets us apart. And it's not just like a novel thing that we have this philosophy. I believe it's required. You know, a question that I get all the time is, how can you be a scientist and still be so invested in philosophy? Like, they don't jive. And actually, I think you can't have one without the other. And what's really unique about chiropractic is we have these like immaterial, these metaphysical terms like innate intelligence, oh gosh, mental impulse. And as long as we have those immaterial terms, we need philosophy, because we can't use deductive conventional science to measure them. And I actually love that.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, in terms of that, when you first then started thinking, oh, I'm going to be a glorified physical therapist, and many chiropractors have DC degrees and see it that way, and many chiropractors in school go into that. What turned that into, wow, there's more to this? From a physical, I'm doing a physical adjustment that's mechanical or mechanistic, to there's something more.
And I think it was probably influences, like starting to delve into, I remember the first reading The Trying of Life, Reggie's book, and then working with Sue and realizing that there was something beyond. And I don't think there's anybody that wouldn't acknowledge that we are energetic beings. And yet, like, they don't have the language or the knowledge enough to understand that, okay, there's some things that are quantifiable and some things that aren't. And that really, you know, it's interesting, because so I spend all this time talking about this science and explaining, like, these are the pathways and this is the neurology. And so much focus goes there when we forget that that's one piece, that we have this, the idea of innate intelligence that flows through the nervous system. So we have this immaterial construct that requires a material matter, right? And so then how do we put that together? And I think that the deductive mechanists in our profession are like, well, it's easier for them to just denounce it and say, we don't need that because we can't measure it. And that's really flawed.
Right. And why is it flawed?
It's flawed because nobody can argue that there isn't something metaphysical that's happening. You know, even if you go all the way back to BJ, I mean, he said if all you're doing is moving a bone, you're not correcting subluxation.
Right.
Because subluxation is not just the material bone at a place. And that, like, I was thinking, what are we going to talk about today? And I knew that we'd probably talk about this whole, how do you mesh science and philosophy? And I'm like, what's the best way to maybe illustrate that? And so I immediately thought about like innate intelligence and then the mental impulse. Like, I remember when I first started school and there were the Green Book kids, you know, like the Delts, and they were so obsessed with the Green Books, and they were talking about this mental impulse, and I thought it was complete garbage until I read some of Kent's stuff and then Simon Senzin talking about how really the mental impulse is a conveyance of information of innate intelligence through the entire body, right?
Right.
As one possible construct. And really, I mean, that's what we're existing in today. Science is about, and the body's way of communicating is information. We are bioinformatic beings. And that's not all quantifiable.
Right. Right. Now, here's something with that, since we're on that note, philosophically, since you mentioned the triad of life, organization plays a huge part to chiropractic philosophy and to health, right? And ease as compared to dis-eous. So where does science and philosophy connect in terms of organization?
Well, I think that you can't really talk about organization without talking about intelligence and organizing intelligence, right?
Right.
So if we think about it, like, what is meaning? And where do we get meaning? Because so far, outside of like cognitive psychology, looking at artifacts of meaning, we have not really been able to scientifically, deductively be able to go, okay, this is meaning and this is where it comes from. Because we don't understand consciousness. And if we think consciousness is not just like our awareness, but like, what is the force that drives our organizing energy and what is the force that drives our intelligence? It's there, but we can't quantify it. Now, there's no scientist that's going to say that meaning doesn't exist, but there's also no scientist that can tell you how to measure it and what it is, right? Without organization, it's meaningless. Take, for example, if you pick up a book and you are reading the words on a page, just happen to have my copy of The Triumph of Intelligence here. As long as it's in English, I can have meaning from this organization that's here. But if this was a Japanese edition, it would be completely meaningless to me.
That's so funny. Mine's right here.
Right? Close. Close. I think organization requires intelligence, or maybe I don't know if organization can even be separated from intelligence. One needs the other.
Well, in my understanding, as my philosophy class as a chairman, is that you never see signs of organization and connote it without intelligence. In other words, you're not going to go, leave your house with dirty dishes and then come back and they're at a higher level of organization, meaning they're put away and clean, without realizing that there has to be an intelligence of some kind that did that. You're not going to think that Barbara Eden came in, and did this. But even that would be an intelligence, right?
Sure. I mean, for me, I think it was Reggie that gave the analogy of, if you were just like a random human dropped on the planet and you'd never seen a watch in your life and you're walking down a beach and you pick up a wristwatch a phone, you would never think that there wasn't an intelligent organization or an intelligent design to it, right?
Right, exactly.
Of course there's intelligence. There has to be. And I think, the trouble we get in as philosophers in chiropractic, or as in having a philosophy, is that in the early days, people took some of the ideas and they got distorted. It's like it was subluxated. This idea that, for example, the power that made the body heals the body. Not really. Actually, it's the intelligence through the matter that helps to heal the body, as long as there's no interference in that intelligence through the matter. And I think that it might be true theologically to say the power that made the body heals the body, but it's not necessarily true philosophically.
Right.
And so it's easier for the mechanists, for scientists to be like, no, that's completely dismissible when you distort the message so that it's just from a theological perspective as opposed to having sound philosophical logic.
Okay. And then, how would you see philosophy then helps bridge these metaphysical and science concepts?
So here's the thing, right? I mean, even in science, things are hypothetical until they're proven. So if we didn't have philosophy, we'd have no way to even discuss these constructs that, as of this point in time, are not quantifiable. So let's take innate intelligence, for example, or even just life force. We got chi, we got prana, life force, that's all kind of the same thing. Maybe the mental impulse is even life force. It's not really quantifiable, but we know that it exists and everybody agrees across cultures that it exists. And so philosophy provides us a way to actually have a conversation around it without necessarily having to say that it's been proven or disproven. And it might, that might be easier for people to swallow if they also understand that most science is still theoretical. You know, the idea of the action potential is a theory, right? And that it's an electrochemical impulse is now being argued if we think about the soliton particle, right? Soliton waves. What's true? There's no true in science. It's science. You're having a conversation.
Right, right.
You know?
And then how does that philosophy direct our science and art? Or intermingle. Maybe it's not only directing, but
I think that the philosophy allows us to have intellectual, meaningful conversations around why we may want to make something understandable, why it's quantifiable. You know, I'm obsessed with consciousness and the study of that in terms of how it might relate with areas of the brain that are impacted by the chiropractic adjustment. So until the 90s, hard scientists never studied consciousness. They said it's a death sentence if you want to try and do research in consciousness because it's not quantifiable. And it wasn't until Francis Crick wrote the Neurobiology of Consciousness in 1990. That's Crick of Watson and Crick. So all of a sudden, this leading scientist is talking about consciousness, and it created a boom in studying about consciousness. And now people today, this is their primary mode of study. And he really opened the door to studying something that still today is not understandable. Like you and I are able to have this conversation because of this realm of understanding of consciousness. We're able to experience the vast richness of our life because of something that is not yet quantifiable in science. Nobody's going to argue that we're conscious, but we can't measure it. And I think it's a great tactic for mechanists to use to dismiss our philosophy because they can't quantify it. Well, all you need to do is look at the rest of the world outside of chiropractic to see that that is a massively flawed approach.
Right. Well, the assumption would be then say that the universe is not organized and it's just an accident.
Exactly.
And that our human bodies are an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the...
Like 100 years ago, we didn't understand how life was created. And there was the idea that it was this, you know, just this spark. And now we fully understand how life is created. I mean, in terms of physical beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Life force, that's another conversation.
Now, bringing us to the 33 principles and some basic philosophical concepts, is and dis-is. Can you talk about that from a combination of philosophy and science perspectives?
Yeah, so ease, and I prefer to keep it in the construct of, well, I'll try to mesh them. So here we have innate intelligence, right? And as long as that's uninterrupted, then we have ease in the system. Let's equate that then with the way that we can have innate intelligence uninterrupted in the body is if we don't have subluxation. No subluxation, then we don't have interference. So let's then take a physical construct or a partially physical construct like subluxation. And for some people, that literally is a physical process. That means there's not many people that are now still working in the bone at a place model, but some people accept a purely biomechanical model.
Right.
Even
right.
if it's purely biomechanical, or let's say it's chemical, there's an inflammation in the body and it's disrupting normal neurological flow. I can give you the science, you know, down to a T of how you could chemically be influenced by a subluxation that could create dis-ease in the body, a lack of ease, so that there's a disruption in the normal flow of neurophysiology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very close to probably what's happening with the immaterial aspect of mental impulse. That these two things, that the mental impulse, while I wouldn't exactly equate it with neurophysiology because I think it's so much more, is also disrupted. And that also equates with dis-ease. I think where
right.
we get into trouble is then trying to explain that to the lay person.
And I also... I, exactly. And I think there's another layer of that. with a different science model, because you were to neuroscience model, but then there's also the thermodynamics, that ease and dis-ease, organization, there's a science behind or connected to those philosophical constructs that they didn't have in the early 1900s when many of these concepts were philosophically, that now are being proven even more in terms of science.
Yeah. If you look at, you know, quantum physics, you know, even the point of our philosophy is not to stay in a green book. The
right.
point of our philosophy actually is to evolve. And I think, you know, we have some people who are really tied to holding it in that place in history. And I think that's not the purpose of philosophy. The purpose of philosophy is to allow dialogue, perhaps
exactly.
about the immaterial.
Right.
And that's the beauty.
Well, and part of that, looking at the principles that at that time, they actually decided to name a principle, the, you know, the chiropractic meaning of life. Here they are in the early 1900s. They say, well, they're so bold that we've discovered the meaning of life, right?
Yeah.
But that's a philosophical and a scientific, conversation outside of chiropractic circles, you know, and the thermodynamics and quantum physics really more gives evidence to the philosophical constructs that we've had for, you know, many years.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the arguments that we have in chiropractic today, the reason why it feels so impactful is because we're such a small profession. And I think eventually, you know, we're going to get to the next level of understanding. And as our philosophy evolves and maybe pushes our science a little bit more, we'll get to the point to see where how the reductive mechanist approach is really, really flawed. And that might not happen in the next 5 or 10 years, but I'm thinking maybe in 20 or 30, because science really is evolving very, very rapidly. The sooner the mechanistic model sees the flaw, like just because you can't quantify something doesn't give you reason to deny its existence. Otherwise, why would we ever get married? Or, I mean, what is love, right?
Right.
That's an easy classic example of something that's not quantifiable yet massively accepted.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, going back to our 33 principles, if we look at subluxation as one of the principles, and we want to bridge that with a philosophical conversation as compared to a science conversation on how they intertwine, there's that world of, well, subluxation and an adjustment is, as you started out this discussion, a glorified physical therapist. Without those 33 principles, that's, you know, that would be what it is. But when you put them in that context, there's so much more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe for some chiropractors who are purely functioning in a biomechanist model, it really is just that. It's a musculoskeletal correction of biomechanical dysfunction without any regard for an idea of a mental impulse. And again, I really want to stress for people that, you know, they tried to define mental impulse a lot way back. If you go, Simon Senzin writes some great stuff about how you tried to define it. And even I'll, you know, admit in the beginning, I thought it was rubbish. But if you think about it today, the science around neurology and even the science around so many things is based on information and informatics, artificial intelligence, even quantum physics. The mental impulse is purely how information flows over the nervous system. It requires a physiological component, neurophysiological component. The brain needs to communicate with every cell, organ, and tissue in the body. We know that's happening neurophysiologically. We might not have all the methods completely down, but we know that there are things happening that demonstrate this neurophysiology. But there's also something metaphysical. And I think that's where chiropractic has its unique approach, because our intention is not just to move a bone. It's to correct subluxation, and correcting subluxation is so much more than moving a bone. We just don't understand the immaterial piece of it, that metaphysical aspect, but it 100% exists.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, do you have a favorite principle?
Oh dear. Maybe 26. Is it 20? See, now I knew you, I should have studied. 24, that's the one about adaptation. I love the idea of adaptation and our ability to adapt, right? That really is the definition of health, is our ability to adapt to an ever-changing environment. Is that 24 or 26?
I'll bring it out here. I've got my, you know, well written on.
Mm-hmm.
24 is the limits of adaptation, and 26 is the comparison of universal and innate forces.
Okay. So we'll go with 24. And hopefully I'm not going to go to Green Book Jail for that.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Burl is going to hang me up for that one.
I had to look it up, too. I don't have it memorized. But here's the thing. You said something I think that's very important. Studying the principles is not just that you dogmatically can repeat them or recite them. It's a conversation. It's that you can think critically. And many people don't necessarily think critically about healthcare that they're doing, chiropractically or allopathically.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about being critically think about and discuss what actually are we doing. And since you said principle number 26, comparison of universal and innate forces, I will have to say that's probably one of my favorites, because I really feel that that helps people understand what you just said a number of times, that an adjustment isn't moving a bone.
Yeah.
That there's, you're applying a force, the chiropractor doesn't adjust, or as I was taught at chiropractic college, you know, the chiropractor thrusts and the knee adjusts. That was the phrase we heard at Sherman, right?
100%.
Which is that, you know, universal forces, innate forces. I think that's central people to understand, that we're not just manipulating a joint.
Yeah, and in some techniques, you're not creating any physiological change in a joint anyways. So the fact that any technique works, I loved when Reggie said, it doesn't matter how you do it, you can hit him in the ass with a shovel. Look, what is the intention? Is your intention to locate, analyze, and correct vertebral subluxation? That's the whole intention of chiropractic. It doesn't matter how you do it. So this fixation, no pun intended, on a mechanical, you know, philosophy of chiropractic and our approach, I think is very limited. It doesn't, I'm not saying it doesn't work for some people. Obviously it works, but it's limited.
Right. Well, I have to say, one, thank you so much for joining us. If people want to connect and with you more in the Prana Foundation, how would they do that?
Yeah, you know, probably one of the easiest ways to connect with us is we have a community page on Facebook, and it's the Prana Foundation. And from there, you can get access to all of our portals. We also have a website, thepranafoundation.org. But if you join the community page, then you'll find, you know, my programs like Dr. Mono's, Dr. Mack's clinical mentorship programs. It's all in through there. It's the easiest way.
Excellent. And as I said, I want to thank you for being part of the Mile High Philosophy Summit. I thank you for all that you're doing for chiropractic and chiropractors. And we're excited to see Tamara at Mile High coming up in August. And again, if you're watching this, thank you for being part of the Mile High Summit as a participant. Really, with all that's going on in the world, this is a global change, and something that will help guide us is our philosophy for sure. And this is a great time to anchor yourself more in that on the ride that we have going on. So pay attention for the next segment coming up. It will also be outstanding. And thank you again, Dr. Mo.
Thanks, Danny. So much fun chatting with you always. Peace out.